Okay, so for those of you who haven't been or missed out what we've been doing so far over the last few weeks, we've been looking at this image of the Wheel of Life. And as I've been describing, this really is a map, if you like, of the human condition, where we find ourselves, and how we create and recreate endlessly a sense of separate selfhood. And I'm not going to have time to say a great deal about it, but just to say that overall, what we have here at the centre, we have the driving forces of greed, hatred, and delusion, these kind of driving forces that keep the whole wheel rotating, this whole structure of selfhood ever rebuilding itself. In the next layer out, I talked about karma and the workings of karma, and this is illustrated in this circle. And as a consequence of karma, we then find ourselves propelled into different experiences of different realms of being. So this is the illustration, the map of the six realms. And then in the final circle, which I talked about last week, was the whole relationship, the way that these realms are constantly recreated through the condition co-production. So this whole process of how conditions create being, and also the ending of those conditions release beings or transform them into other realms. So this was very briefly what we looked at last week, but the important thing we did spend some time on is that within this circle there is a point, a vital point, which I'm going to open out a lot more tonight, which is the gap. So that's really what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And I'm going to do it really by also including another map or another image. So on the shrine we have this, what's actually it's called the Five Buddha Mandala. So we could describe this as another map, another image, but I'd actually say that although this I would describe as a map, this is more of a symbol. So a symbol is something that, although it has readable meaning, those meanings are always opening into ever deeper significance. So a map or a sign has quite an explicit set of information to give out, whereas a symbol, by its nature, is ever deepening, ever bringing new meaning simply by its nature. It can't be pinned down into a single fact. So this is the symbol of the Buddha Mandala. So this is this Buddha Mandala is really a way of depicting this goal of practice. So the symbol of the Buddha Mandala, it describes the territory of a mind that is no longer gripped by a sense of separation, that has let go of this duality described on the wheel, the duality of self and other, the duality of inner and outer. And it's the territory that we find ourselves in as a consequence of noticing, really exploring actual qualities and sensations that arise when we rest, when we release into the gap between feeling and grasping. This was the gap that we described I described last week. So another way of naming the Buddha Mandala is that the Buddha Mandala describes what happens when we release from vijnana, or this divided consciousness, that sense of self and other, etc., to jnana, which is non-dual consciousness, which is more usually described as wisdom. So we're moving, so really this image on the shrine is pointing to the goal of this work that we do, to release ourselves from the wheel. So we could say that the Buddha Mandala describes the fruit of experientially releasing into or through the gap. So whatever realm we inhabit, created by our particular way of interpreting experience, we can find the gap within it. And it's this gap that releases us into this prism of colours and knowing tones of the wisdom of the Buddhas. So just to remind us that the gap exists between feeling and grasping. And I'd just like to say, following on from a small comment that was made to me by Pranyamati last week. So Pranyamati said that it's really important to be aware of the two sides of the gap. Quite often when the teaching of around the gap is done, there's an emphasis placed on just the feeling experience. So the two sides are, we have the feeling tone, which is simply pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, and then beyond the gap we have what we do with that experience. This is the pushing and the pulling at experience, the filtering of our basic feeling tone through which we create or recreate the known narrative. And this recreation through grasping is the activity of the samskaras, these deep volitional responses that are like ruts in our mind. This is the territory that we work with. So these ruts, these samskaras, are channeling and filtering our bare feelings, painful or pleasant, and taking them down well-worn routes within the mind that define and create our interpretation of experience. So we have to know that there are these both sides of the gap. So we need to know the bare feeling, but also the grasping that arises almost simultaneously in relation to feeling, so that we can directly experience this shift that we tend to make quite blindly, unfortunately, from bare feeling sensation to manipulating those experiences in some way. This is something that we are doing constantly. We're filtering experience, heightening it, or denying experience. And these activities of the mind, unfortunately, are quite often unconscious. So what supports us in this process of feeling our way into the gap? The central thing to do is simply to bring awareness to our experience. Turn to our experience. So through turning to experience, towards experience, with awareness, inherent in awareness, there is a natural spaciousness. If we really give ourselves to experience, what seems to be present or seems to become present is space. Actually, we see our arising experiences fading and passing out of existence in a space. So when we really explore the concrete, the actual sensations, we begin to notice that what we took to be real and solid is actually far more mysterious, far more spacious, unfathomable, and lucid. this seems to be the qualities of experience. And really opening into those qualities, what that seems to give rise with to is that it begins to slow down and expose this movement between feeling and the particular form that our grasping takes. And the more that we can get hold of that as a process, the more we can really feel that, know that in our actual experience, it begins to create opportunities to really soften and release from these particular habits of knowing that are being ever recreated by our personal samskaras. This process of simply rebuilding ourselves, rebuilding the world in known forms. So coming back to the image of the wheel, what we have in all of these realms, we have a figure, Buddha figure. It's actually Avalokiteshvara. And Avalokiteshvara is depicted in all these realms. And usually this compassionate presence that is available is illustrated as bringing particular gifts to each of the separate realms. And what I'm suggesting tonight is that the greatest gift for all the realms is pointing to and finding the gap between feeling and grasping. Because without this presence, the presence of the gap, without this possibility, there could be no liberation. We'd be endlessly bound in this cyclic world. We'd be bound in an enclosed system. So it's absolutely, the gap is absolutely indispensable for the spiritual life. It is the point of freedom. It is that aspect that we are offered through simply turning towards experience. So what I'm talking about tonight is really a celebration of this ever-present gift of liberation that exists simply by resting, settling into our actual experience. So it's also a celebration of the truth that liberation is inherent in all experience. So there's nothing that arises that cannot be turned towards and sat with. And by going into whatever is arising, we can trust that it will open into the Buddha wisdom. So Buddha wisdom is inherent in all experience. It's the ground out of which this dance of ever-changing sensations is arising. It's the shift from this dualistic interpretation to non-dual knowing that liberates the fantasies, the fabrications that are mapped out so clearly, so vividly in this wheel of life. It frees these fabrications into the Buddha mandala. So as I hope I've explained 3 weeks ago, when we were talking about the six realms, each of these realms have been created, self-created, by particular mental patterns of grasping. So each of the realms are imprisoning responses that create a particular world view, a particular world experience. And these tendencies are sometimes described as the mental poisons. So each of the realms has a very particular quality that is creating that realm. And each facet of the Buddha mandala, which is, although it's indivisible, it does reflect the particular fruits of transforming, or simply more truthfully, releasing from these poisons. So the Buddha mandala is actually a representation of the transformation or released patterns of energy that has been bound within this wheel and has been concretized into what we describe as the six realms. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to go through briefly each of the realms and remind us of the particular mental poison of that realm, and then point to how that releases and transforms into the wisdom of the Buddha Mandala as a consequence of simply resting within and exploring the gap. And I probably should say at this point that this isn't the traditional way that this bridge between the wheel and the Buddha Mandala is usually taught. Usually what we have to bridge the wheel to the Buddha Mandala is what's called the spiral path. And this is a very interesting, useful teaching. And if you are interested in that, to find out more about that, I'd recommend The Three Jewels by Sangharakshita, because he lays out the spiral path that leads from the gap through a series of ever more refined states that eventually leads us to the same point, the Buddha Mandala. So what I'm talking about tonight is very much my attempt to make a more direct and immediately felt connection between this apparently transcendental realm of the Buddha Mandala and our lived experience and experience of the wheel. So one could say that usually this transition from the wheel to the mandala is negotiated by a spiral, and this is described as a path, a model of the spiritual life as a path. And what I'm talking about tonight is more talking about that transition from wheel to mandala, more as what might sometimes be described as a lotus model, the unfolding, the natural unfolding of experience into the Buddha Mandala. So I'm now going to just go through the realms and say a bit about each of them. So I'm going to begin with the Asura realm. And the poison with of this realm is, nice sticky, you probably won't be able to read this, but I'll put them up anyway. You can have a look at them at some point if you're interested. So the poison, the mental poison associated with the Asura realm is envy. So if you recall, the Asuras are always looking up into the God realm and seeking to cut down the tree of knowledge which fruits within the God realm, so that they can grab the fruits that are being eaten in the God realm. So envy in this sense of always looking out beyond ourselves and judging, evaluating ourselves in relation to what others seem to have. So this envy arises out of a sense of lack or absence, and of course of craving the fruits, without recognizing that actually we already have the means to move towards, to kind of nourish and bring into being these same fruits, simply by relying on our own experience and our own unique potential. So when we really open into the gap between bare feeling and the grasping manifesting as envy, what we begin to uncover is actually we are good enough. We are sufficient. This actual lived experience is sufficient. We have the means that we've projected out onto others and lost trust in this, in our actual lived experience. And we recognize that what we long for is actually inherent within us, within our experience. The truth is that our actual lived experience is rich and abundant when we really turn towards it and release ourselves from comparison and envy. We discover the means that we have to achieve all that we need right here. We have the balance. Firstly, we have the ability to practice, the ability to learn, the ability to set up conditions for ourselves, the ability to reflect on teachings, and all things, all these things actually are things that we can do actively in our own experience to gain what we are perceiving as being in the other. So this move from envy to really knowing, acknowledging that actually in our experience, in the here and now, in our sense experience, in our thinking mind, in the community, in our world system, we do have these good fortune to have these forces, these gifts available to us. And this is the actual arising of the Buddha, named Amoghasiddhi. So Amoghasiddhi is the green Buddha, and again, all this, there's a huge wealth of information here which I can only sort of point to tonight. But basically, all these Buddha figures, if you look in the Sankara's book, Meeting the Buddhas, fantastic descriptions and support to really unpack these figures. So Amoghasiddhi is the embodiment of what's called the wisdom, the all-accomplishing wisdom. So independence upon really facing envy, really exploring that in our experience, really opening into that, into the bare experience, we see that actually everything we need is here. Everything arises through the sense field that we have access to. So that's why it's called all accomplishing, in the sense that everything we need is present. And so this is very much helps to soften and release from the poisons of envy. So what is really fascinating about each of these wisdoms, each of these different manifestations of the wisdom, is that when you, if you move into one, what tends to happen is the others open around it. So this is partly the nature of a symbol, that it's ever opening, ever bringing new meaning, bringing new values into the image, into the symbol. So as we open into the all-accomplishing wisdom of Amoghasiddhi, what that also does is it starts to open out what is described as discriminating wisdom. So discriminating wisdom is actually the result of dealing with another mental poison. So the mental poison that I'm going to look at now is arises in particularly in the Preta realm, and this is described as greed. But I want to strengthen that slightly and just call it addictive greed, just to give you the weight of that energy. It's a compulsive desire to cram experience, grasp after experience. And this grasping is transformed into the discriminating wisdom of Amitabha. So what this the map shows is that the praetors are wildly grabbing at experience, which they're hoping will fill some felt void or absence in their being. So this is the world of addiction, where we habitually grasp after pleasures in a way that can actually never fill the void that we feel. We seek ever stronger sensual experiences to banish this sense of lack or absence. So when we really open into this learned pattern of response, when we really stay in that gap of real wanting to move into that grasping, addictive behaviour, what we begin to recognise is that some experiences really do nourish and others only smother or suppress experience. They suppress this sense of lack. So this is the transforming and discriminating wisdom of Amitabha. So the red figure is associated with love. This is Amitabha, so red there. And this is its ability to discern that which really nourishes and that which simply suppresses this sense of lack. And this discrimination is an act of love. It's the discriminating love that is so vital for freeing the bind illustrated by this realm of the praetors. So what I'm hoping is, so far, that I'm beginning to give you a sense that our particular habits of grasping, if we know them, their particular form of what we describe as our samskaras, our habitual ways of being, will tend to open us through a particular doorway into a specific quality that arises within this rich prism of this luminous, coloured wisdom figures arising as the Buddha Mandarin. It's as if our unique samskaric patterns transforms into a specific wisdom. So the wisdom, our unique wisdom, is intimately connected to the pattern of our unique poison. So the work that we do to release from our particular patterning becomes a unique display or manifestation of wisdom. I find this fantastically optimistic as an image. It means that our personal work that we do on our poisons is actually the basis for wisdom, for our ability to really deeply know how things really are, and on that basis then act, quite spontaneously. What comes out of wisdom is compassion. So we can then, on that basis of real knowing and understanding our habits of being, we naturally are able to act, respond with compassion. So this is, for me, it kind of gives the motivation to really know and explore our unique samskaras, these kind of binding forces that are defining our experience. Really opening to that, really naming them, working with them, is the foundations that will give rise to wisdom. So having described the wisdom of Amitabha associated with the Preta realm, I'm now going to move on to the human realm. So the human realm, the particular patterning that underpins this realm, the particular poison, is pride. Somewhere in your list. Me sticky. Me stickies are all gone to pot there. Oh.
Right.
No. I just have to. So we have a particular patterning that undermines this realm, which is pride. So human beings have developed the art of survival. They've created society and culture, And this tends to have arisen out of an ability to discriminate between what's helpful and what's harmful. But these amazing survival strategies have also tended to create separation between self and others, and between self and the natural world. And this is the nature of pride. It creates this sense of self-sufficient autonomy and even supremacy over other species, over the same species and the environment. So in this realm, as an act of compassion, the wisdom of equality arises for the human realm. So this is what we're looking at. This is the embodied wisdom of equality, which is the yellow Buddha of Ratnasambuddha. I can't believe I didn't write those out. I can't find them. So, we just have to picture them here, in this space here. So in this space we have pride, we have Ratnasambuddha, which is the yellow Buddha, and this the wisdom is of equality. So when we explore this gap, the gap between feeling and grasping, experiencing ourselves as separate, self-sufficient beings, Ratnasambuddha reveals and dissolves the pride that sustains this illusory, separate, self-sufficient being. The proud delusion of our samskaras creating a false sense of autonomy begins to break down. Because what we really know when we enter into that space, the space of awareness that surrounds pride, is that we begin to recognize our interdependency and the temporary nature of many of the things that we cling to for this sense of well-being and autonomy. What is revealed is these things are insubstantial and ephemeral. So the wisdom of equality shows that possessions, status, popularity and power, all these things are transient and unreliable. That there is an underlying abundance and value in interconnectedness. We and the world are like an ever-expanding cornucopia. So it's more as if, rather than being separate beings, we are interconnected, creating what's sometimes shown as a dual net of Indra, where each dual reflects the other, augmenting and supporting our unfolding life. So each arising event sparkles with interdependency and connection. So Ratnasambuddha's wisdom of equality breaks down this illusion of ultimate separate being. And through this we return and join the world and return and stand on and with the world, become part of the world. So before going any further, I thought it'd be worth just going back to looking at the driving nature of the hub of the wheel. So at the hub we have this interwoven system of resistance, grasping and ignorance that's powering these delusions. And when these blind driving forces are seen through, they release the samskaras that we've been talking about. So that what is revealed behind or beneath greed, hatred, and delusion is that we see impermanence, insubstantiality, and unsatisfactoriness. So it's directly knowing these marks that really begins to release us into the Buddha mandala. So I do have stickers for those. So craving releases into knowing fully unsatisfactoriness. Hatred, when we really look into hatred, we can't actually find an object that we can really fix onto as being that object of hatred. There is nothing there. It is impermanent. And even though we try over and over again to make things substantial, permanent and fixed, actually they are insubstantial. So by releasing from ignorance, we give rise to the deep knowing of insubstantiality. So actually, by transforming this core from these driving forces, blind driving forces, into this clearer seeing and knowing these marks of conditioned existence, actually we really begin to unravel the whole structure of the wheel, really bringing these to the heart of our experience, really knowing that all things are impermanent, really knowing that all things are ultimately unsatisfactory and insubstantial. If we really had that at the heart of our being, we would quite naturally open, break free of this wheel through the gap. So, I'm going to turn now to the hell realm. So the hell realm here, the hell realm is primarily driven by anger or hatred. And the wisdom of this realm that comes to this realm is said to be the mirror-like wisdom of Akshobhya. So, say a bit about that. So why mirror-like wisdom? So what a mirror suggests is a complete lack of non-reactivity. So a mirror reflects things just as they are. The mirror is completely unchanged by whatever is reflected in its nature. So as we all know, hatred, anger, is a very powerful force. I think actually anger is not quite, should be hatred, I think, rather just anger. Anger's a bit, I won't expand that. So it's actually hatred rather than anger. So the strength and power of hatred, it needs this ground of utter unshakability to really absorb and transform this powerful energy. So the image of the mirror offers us a way of being that doesn't deny the experiences that are giving rise to the hatred, to the rage. It allows us to be with it without being burned or consumed by the experience. So a mirror, it displays the image within it, but the image doesn't stick to it. It just passes through the inherent nature of the mirror. So the mirror, nothing sticks to it. So this quality of awareness can really be with and know the power, the force of hatred, without being shaken, destabilized by it. So experience arises and passes as across this vast, utterly still lake of the mirror-like awareness. The stiller the water, the clearer and more vivid the reflection becomes. So this is the amazing power of clear seeing. It creates an ability to simply let experience come and go. This powerful and maybe necessary resistance, which we sometimes describe as hatred, actually is nowhere to be found in the clarity of the view. There is no resistance in the mirror. those experiences that we are reacting against or reacting to, they can simply be in the mirror and they can change and pass. And we remain stable in response to those experiences. So this is the relieving aspect of the wisdom of Akshobhya. So just about there in terms of the wheel, and where there are two more realms. So there's the God realm and the animal realm. And in both realms there is a sense of ignorance of their true situation. So both the gods believe that they are eternal and in some sort of eternal state, and the animals are unfortunately unaware of their situation. They don't see the risks, the dangers inherent in that realm. So both these realms have the problem of being basically ignorant, deluded. And so in both of these realms there is this sense of just not really being aware of what is happening in their experience. And what as we can see from the Buddha Mandala, the final realm that is revealed, that is meets this basic level of ignorance, is the wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu, which is really truth. The Dharma as truth, as the sort of the bare essence of the wisdom of the Buddhas, the essential essence. And this is why it's actually seen to, is depicted as white. So what we have at the centre is Virochana, the white Buddha. And it's said that out of this light, so we have that essential essence of the Dharma, of truth, which then splits, like as if through a prism, and gives rise to these, the other four Buddha qualities. So this essential essence is what is that which faces, which transforms, the basic delusion of the gods and the animal realm. So really, Virochana meets delusion in its many forms. This figure of white light is the source of all the other colours manifesting through the mandala as reflections of this essential light. So it's the light of truth, the light of the Dharma, shining into the fabrications of our samskaras. And it's ultimately the compassion of the Buddhas that is manifesting in this gap between feeling and grasping. And it's this the light that is arising within this gap that is the wisdom that allows us to dissolve the samskaras and open to the gifts of wisdom of the Buddha Mandala. So this is why the gap is so important for spiritual practice. Okay, so I'm aware, as usual in this these talks, trying to cram quite a lot into a short period of time. But what we're going to do now is time to reflect upon, to have an opportunity to share our responses, any questions that we may have. So the question I thought might be worth exploring tonight is, where do you stand in relation to this trusting, this staying in the gap that I'm suggesting is the nature of practice? Do you trust it not at all? Do you want some other shape to the spiritual life? Do you trust it not at all? Do you trust it a little bit? Or Do you have absolute faith in the gap? So that is the question. Where do you sit in relation to what I've been presenting here tonight? The relationship between the ability to stay in this space between feeling and grasping, inhabit that space. Do you trust that if you really do that, turn towards that raw experience, it will lead to liberation? There you are. Little topic for discussion. So.